Hello to whomever may be listening to this. That was Sail by Able Nation, and I included that because this is going to be a bit of a convoluted explanation. I apologize for that. I can't really do all that much about it. This is just how the ADHD brain works. I will do my best to shorten and make what I can concise, but it's not going to be concise by the standards of a neurotypical brain. And there is nothing whatsoever wrong with being neurotypical. There is nothing whatsoever wrong with being neurodivergent either. I'm not going to judge anyone for either. That's just fucking stupid. And more than that, it's absolutely fucking harmful. It's utterly detrimental to not only... Well, I need to think about how to phrase this. Failing to recognize our differences and understand that they exist. And yes, they may separate us, however, we all still want the same shit at the end of the fucking day. We all have the same basic fucking needs. Maybe this is just me trying to satisfy my need to be heard, seeing as I wasn't for the overwhelming majority of my childhood, and in hindsight, I can't do shit about that, clearly. I'm not asking anybody to listen. I'm not fucking going to ask anybody to listen to something like this. You've seen the fucking title. You know what the hell this is. I don't want anybody to listen to this who is in too vulnerable of a place. At the same time, I can't water this down. Because that is disingenuous. Utterly fucking disingenuous. I know that my capacity and willingness to trigger myself is something that it's abnormal. I realize that people who have major triggers like this tend to prefer to hide from them. And that's for their own self-preservation. In no way whatsoever will I judge anyone for that. You do what you need to do to keep yourself safe. I don't care what effect this has on me. If that means not listening, good, okay. Do what you need to do. The last thing I want to do is hurt anyone, harm anyone, or bring anybody down. However, I can't convolute this. That robs all of this of its full fucking context. And I'm not doing this to trigger myself in a negative way, which I realize can be very, very difficult to wrap your lobes around. I mean, there is a very, very good chance that this is extremely fucking unhealthy. I can't justify that to anyone. I can't convince anyone that this isn't unhealthy. I need to do this for my own sake. So, I actively seek triggers so that I can understand them and learn how to process them, to figure out exactly what in my brain they aggravate and what the fuck I can do about it when, in the real world, in life, I am faced with those fucking triggers anyhow. This allows me to be more effective in the moment when faced with visceral triggers in my day-to-day life. I mean, I may be brutally attempting to desensitize myself to this, however, with how absurdly fucking sensitive I am to all of this, is desensitization really a bad thing? Especially when I am using that desensitization to heal. It's like there's an infection, and the only way that the body can eradicate that infection is through a high fucking fever. You have to burn it out of you. This is just what the body does. This is how the body protects itself. So I make an active and very, very conscious effort to do the same with my brain. Is it reckless? Maybe. Is it against the advice of my psychiatrist? Yes. Is this against the advice of my therapist? Yes. However, I resolutely and abso-fucking-lutely believe that how we treat depression, how we treat CPTSD, how we fucking treat PTSD itself is in desperate need of reform, specifically by people who are decimated by these disorders. I'm not afraid of the dark. I'm not afraid of the viscerally disgusting, the worst sides of fucking humanity. I've faced many of them firsthand. How the fuck can they hurt me now? They can hurt me in memory and hindsight. So I am maybe too willing to desensitize my memory and hindsight. As you may be aware, I have been tapering down off of my antidepressant Paxil for the sake of utter fucking honesty, I guess. It doesn't really matter what fucking medication I've been on. On the other hand, it does matter. I had a bit of a realization yesterday, something that hadn't quite sunk in fully. I think that realization came because I've been forgetting to take my antidepressant for, all of this week so far. Although, to be fair, it's a very, very low dose, and I have been tapering down anyhow. I don't know how to explain this part to someone who has never been on an antidepressant, so, forgive me if this doesn't really exactly make sense. One aspect of antidepressants that very, very, very much does help me is that it's not exactly that they flatten out my affect, which is something that many, many people have trouble with in terms of taking antidepressants. Your emotions can become a bit dulled. Your responses to what you feel can also become dulled. It's odd. It's not exactly a dissociative thing. It's your brain and body are not as connected as they otherwise would be if you were not taking this medication. This doesn't mean that taking the medication is in any way a bad thing. Please, no. Utterly, I'm not against medication in the slightest. I have had an extremely fucking heinous decade, the last 10 years, on and off a slew of medications, many of which I didn't even fucking need. If anybody should loathe and despise psychiatric medication, it should be me. However, I'm not going to pretend that psych meds have not been an immense help to me, because that'd be a fucking lie. And I'm not going to advise anyone whatsoever on what to do with their own brain and body. I'm not saying it's a good idea to take psych meds. I'm not saying it's a good idea not to take psych meds. That is 100% up to you. Have psych meds helped me a hell of a lot when I otherwise would probably fucking be dead by now? Yes, they have. Have they caused irreparable damage? Yeah. Of fucking course they have. I've been on and off every fucking antidepressant on the market in the United States. This isn't an exaggeration. In the last 10 years, I have been on every fucking antidepressant that is available in the United States of fucking America. Granted, nearly all of them were the generic form because that's all my insurance will cover, so I can't pretend that I am familiar with the brand name pharmaceutical variant, which, yes, there is a difference between the original medication and the generic version. I've taken a few of the, like, straight up fucking brand name antidepressants because my insurance wouldn't cover the generic variation, and the difference is staggering. Like, generic Celexa, citalopram, fucked me up. Badly. To this day, I barely have an appetite, and that is explicitly because of citalopram. And citalopram is the generic name for Celexa, is it Celexa, or was it Cymbalta? Let me Google that real quick. I don't want to give bad information. I don't exactly recall. Celexa. Okay. It was Celexa, not Cymbalta. Either way, the brand name, actual Celexa, it had a very, very different effect on me in comparison to the generic, and I mean, sure, this could fucking be a placebo. That's entirely possible. But I think I've had enough experience with psychiatric medication overall to discern the difference between when I am tricking myself into believing something is working and when something is actually making a difference in my neurochemical function. I can't explain verbally how this distinction is apparent to me. It's, in many ways, it's more of a feeling than a thought. I know there is a difference. It's okay if you disagree. That's not a problem whatsoever. I only know my experience. So? Where was I going with this thought? Not having Paxil in my system the last 5-6 days. I don't know. I probably forgot to take it a few times last week as well. I'm not sure. It's my medication tray is just a week at a time, so I can't check what it said last week. It's just set up for this week. Anyhow, I woke up this morning feeling like something was very, very off. And I am not sure exactly what. I mean, given the state of the world at the moment, what the fuck isn't off? But I'm talking in a more personal way, not in the... Sorry, I'm scooching my screen back so that it's not, like, right in my face. The... Shit, I don't remember where that thought was going. God damn it, ADD! Fuck. This happens so fucking often. My brain is excellent at distracting itself. It's like, that's about the only fucking thing my brain excels in aside from overanalysis. Fuck. I don't remember. I need coffee. Which is another part of me treating my ADHD at the moment. Stimulants. Help. Well. Oops. I just almost dropped my allergy meds. I'm taking my allergy meds too, because, ooh, I can hear my phlegm. I'm sure you can hear my phlegm. I would apologize for being so phlegmatic, but, we gotta use the four humors somehow nowadays, right? Right. Also, I can't do shit about my allergies. They're just there. Stimulant medications are a first-line treatment for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder because our brains are understimulated, which is a massive misconception about ADHD in and of itself. It's not a deficit of attention, it is a diminished capacity to direct that attention where you need to direct it. You're at the whim of whatever the fuck your gray matter decides is interesting. And I do my damnedest to achieve some semblance of self-discipline within the confines of my ADHD. I can't force myself or my brain to do something that it does not and will not. I mean, without adequate treatment for my ADHD, which at the moment isn't being treated whatso-fucking-ever. Hopefully this will change very, very soon. However, I don't know if it will be. I hope so. Just finding the right help is a massive problem because too many people resolutely believe that ADHD is only a childhood disorder. It's not. I can fucking guarantee you that abso-fucking-lutely attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is just as detrimental when you are an adult as when you were a child, if not more so. Because it's okay if kids are bouncing off the walls. That's kind of just what kids do. But for an adult to be bouncing off the walls, that is socially unacceptable and irresponsible adulting, I guess, is the right way to explain it. I know I get some of my ADHD from my dad. He was diagnosed as a kid, which, when he was a kid in the 70s and 80s, ADHD was significantly less researched than it is now. And if his mother would have never taken him off of his medication as he was a fucking child, I very, very firmly believe not only would his life have been extremely different, but so would mine. Her failure to actually help her son has left an indelible echo into the next generation, and I'm not going to go all that far into the disgusting disaster that is my family and my family issues. This post in and of itself is centered around Dad, not what contributed to him becoming who he became. However, at the same time, I don't think it's a good idea to discredit or ignore what led to him, what led to every horrible thing he did to others, to himself. A lot of that core issue was simply his mother's failure early on in his life. And as much as I do not like my father in the slightest and deeply resent every horrible thing he did to me, at the end of the day, he was still just a wounded child, too. That's why he hurt his children. Mostly his daughter rather than his son. And not to get too personal with family shit, my brother and I weren't raised together. We've never fucking lived together, thankfully. I would never, ever, 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 ever in my fucking life want to live with him. Or with Dad's parents, because they're fucking awful. They like to believe they aren't, but that's because they're blinded by their own bullshit. And I'm not willing to fucking blind myself. Period. I don't care if it's easier. I don't care if this is agonizing. I'm not going to fucking close my eyes to something actively fucking harmful. Whether it's something I'm doing or something someone else is doing. This awareness fucking hurts. I can't deny that. But I can take pain. That's not a big deal. I mean, it's much, much, much more difficult for me to withstand an emotional attack than it is for me to withstand a physical one. In part because that's the more insidious abuse I received. I can take physical pain. I'm going to hurt anyway. What's more pain? How is that gonna make much of a fucking difference, really? On an emotional level, though, it's more immediately triggering for me to be hurt. And the issue with this in and of itself is my ADHD. People with ADHD, we are fucking absurdly sensitive to everything. Pair that with complex post-traumatic stress disorder, and this becomes a step beyond hypersensitivity. I can't control my sensitivity, however, I can learn how to temper and wield it into something that serves me rather than something that only serves to hurt me. And since I woke up this morning feeling like something was very, very wrong, I feel like it is a good idea for me to explore triggers that my brain has dulled. Because I feel like I am ready to. I think I'm ready to endure that, and more than ready, I feel that I am capable of enduring this. Feeling the feels until there is something less intense to feel. Until that feeling dies down a little bit and settles and can begin to really heal. After that massive inflammatory response, after the skin is angry and red and hot and burning and seeping all manner of pus and effluvia, after then you can heal. But you have to endure that burning agony first. There's no way around it. I mean, you can dull it, yes, and make it easier to withstand. And there is nothing wrong with doing this. You do still have to feel it, though. Maybe not in its full, unrestrained form. But you do still have to feel it to process it and move through it, and then thus move past it. I am admittedly strange in my willingness to do this. I know. And this isn't me in any way trying to make myself seem more fucking interesting or special or different than I actually am. I'm not fucking special for this. At all. More than that, I don't fucking want to be special in any goddamn way. I want to be like everybody else. The repugnant reality that I am not. That's what fucking hurts. And while I realize that something this difficult and this intense is not something everybody can endure, nor is it something that everybody should be willing to subject themselves to, I am willing. If this is the price of healing, so fucking be it. The worst has happened. The worst is gone. Now is simply a matter of picking up the pieces and figuring out where they're supposed to go. So, hopefully nobody in my family is here unbeknownst to me, because many of them have read this. And many of them have heard me tell this exact version of me dealing with Dad. Well, that's not exactly the right way to explain it. It's not me dealing with Dad, it's me recognizing the effect he's had on me. And dealing with that effect. I don't know if... Oh, I just had an interesting thought. I think some of this is coming up in part because of me taking on the role of Death in the Endless series. I mean, yes, of course, the adorably sweet goth chick would appeal to me. That's not far removed from the real me. And in no way am I afraid of death. I have spent a ludicrous amount of time chasing an early grave, wanting nothing more than to fucking die. My dad's suicide changed that. I'm going to go and grab the Ankh that I bought. BRB. It's nothing special. Nothing too fancy. Just a little Ankh with a snake wrapped around it. And that also factors into all of this, I think. I still fucking feel suicidal. I still feel like I want to fucking die most of the time. I'm not going to act on that feeling. I'm not going to act on that desire. I'm not going to put myself in a position where, due to my own chosen negligence, I could die. And with the fucking pandemic we're all enduring now, this is a hell of a mindfuck for the fucking perpetually suicidal. I don't know how exactly to explain or impress upon you how... I don't even know how to fucking finish that sentence. I don't... When faced with the reality that each and every one of us is going to fucking die and could die at any fucking moment, that's never been more real to my perception than now. Which, in a way, makes me kind of grateful for COVID, which I realize sounds absolutely fucking insane and may seem awful to people who have lost someone in this pandemic, and in no way whatsoever do I have any desire to devalue or demean your grief. No, absolutely not. I am very, very simply wanting to explain my perspective as someone who has spent too fucking long chasing an early grave. In December of this year, December 18th, actually, assuming I am alive then, which I'm going to do my damnedest to be, but who fucking knows with COVID, that will be the 10-year anniversary of my most recent suicide attempt. And cognitively, I've known that for a good long while, just it hadn't sunk in emotionally yet. I'm not really sure how to quantify my perception of now. In part because I know this is going to seem absolutely fucking insane to others, and while I don't particularly give a fuck about seeming strange or weird to others, I know I'm fucking weird, it's fine. I do still have this affective need to be like everybody else, and the stark reality that I am not is jarring. It's fucking scary. I don't want to be different, and I've been rambling for like 40 minutes at this fucking point. I need to get to the goddamn point. Okay, ADD. That's what we're gonna do. Another drink of coffee. I'm not quite awake yet. Okay. I have been having very, very, very fucking vivid dreams the last few nights, which is partly the lack of medication regulating my neurochemicals, and I mean, if you want my opinion for whatever the fuck it's worth, there is also an astrological component here. However, I'm not going to get into that because that's not exactly relevant. I mean, it is to me and my ability to quantify and understand myself as well as the world around me, and not only the world, the entirety of the fucking universe. That's some serious galaxy brain shit that I don't see a reason to entertain at the moment. And that's a bit too objective. Right now, I need to be subjective. So, I thought about recording me reading this old journal entry that I wrote in the months after Chester Bennington's suicide. I mean, Chester and Linkin Park overall were a huge, huge factor in my teenage years, as they were for just about every angry young person in my generation. And losing him, losing his voice, the impact that had on me, I'm not entirely sure how to explain. I think I remember explaining it in this fucking journal entry. Speaking of, I'm just going to fucking get to it. You know the triggers. I implore you, if these are at all too much for you right now, turn this the fuck off. Please. I will get on my fucking hands and knees and beg you if I fucking have to. I don't want this to harm anyone. In no way whatsoever do I want this to hurt anyone. I am very, very much a harm reduction kind of person. Yes, I do have impulses to harm others. This is when they have harmed me. This is a response to what they have done to me. As in the Devil's in My Fucking Details audio I posted. Do I have any inclination to do something remotely similar in real life, in actual flesh and blood reality? No. Because I know it's not going to fucking end well. It's mutually fucking assured destruction. And what's the fucking point of mutually assured destruction? How is that at all beneficial? The opposite of war isn't fucking peace, it's creation. Lovey Bohem. Which is an interesting parallel to now, really. The AIDS and HIV crisis. Another recent plague. The more insidious plague, I feel, is refusing to acknowledge the full extent of mental illness. I realize this is a horrifying, terrifying thing. It's fucking utterly incomprehensible to people who are not affected by mental illness in one way or another. If you have never felt any of this, you're not going to understand. And that's okay. If this is you, I am so fucking glad that you don't. Genuinely. I don't fucking want anybody to endure this shit. It is absolute agony, unrestrained fucking pain. Nobody deserves this. But when you are faced with this, the only option you really have is to either endure or chase an early grave. I have spent too goddamn long chasing my end before it can come. Let's just get to this fucking post. Where are my glasses? I haven't read this post back in years, but I feel like I need to now. I feel like I can now. Let's just get to it. On suicide and breaking the habit. Originally posted 7/22/17, re-edited and re-uploaded, although it has been fucking deleted since, January 12th, 2018. I've been hesitant to talk about suicide. I am not a stranger to suicidal ideation, attempting suicide, or 72-hour psychiatric holds. Been there, done that, currently doing my best to take care of myself so I don't have to go again. Suicide is a delicate subject, one I see from the suicidal perspective and from being left behind to deal with the fallout. In the early hours of January 9th, 2017, someone on their morning run found my dad's body in a public park. Dad had a long history with self-harm, which I've inherited, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which I have also inherited, and some form of psychosis. It is likely this psychosis is paranoid schizophrenia, but he was never diagnosed with this because he wouldn't seek help. His habitual self-harm killed him in the end, with one wound in the right/wrong place. The strange part is the artery he nicked is the same I'd set my sights on during a particularly nasty bout of depression a few years back. I'd never told anyone. It's not the kind of secret anyone else needs to really know. I'm saying this now because any discussion of method is apparently forbidden, chock full of contagion. In no way whatsoever am I going to advise anyone to... Fuck. And this just took me out of the post, because now I am afraid that this is going to harm someone, and that is the last fucking thing I want. However, keeping this a fucking secret harms me. So which is the lesser of two fucking evils? I don't know. I don't have an answer. Back to reading. When I was a toddler, he became paralyzed from the waist down after a tree trimming incident. He was reckless and paid a steep price instead of bothering with safety gear, but he was alive. That accident defined the rest of his life, an immovable object he never was able to accept in his path. I think he thought he was an unstoppable force before. He'd begun using somewhere around 14, and I don't think he really had much clean time since, so drugs certainly played a part in that perceived invincibility. And he was an Aries to boot, embodying the masculine features of Mars for better and worse. I'm a Scorpio myself, utilizing Martian yin to Aries yang. Unstoppable force spawns immovable object, apparently. Dad was deeply sick by the time I came along. Not long before he broke his back, he put his fist through a wall inches from my still soft head while I was in my mother's arms. She decided to leave and raise me herself, with support from both families. For this, I am grateful. Mom fucked up a lot, but she did her damnedest to raise me as best she could, which is more than I can say for Dad. Though I did have to spend a few months living with him when I was between 9 and 10, after Mom lost custody of me for, I don't even fucking remember if that was the first time or not. Either way, a few months of hell is a small price to pay compared to the entirety of my childhood. My memory of the day-to-day is very foggy in that time, but I recall being quote-unquote home, alone often while Dad was at his girlfriend at the second's apartment with her kids. I remember being sad and feeling lonely a lot. I had to switch to a different school and don't remember making friends with anyone. But even then, I preferred being at school. It was more fun than being alone in an apartment I'd only been in once or twice beforehand. I remember being jealous of his pet fish because at least Dad treated it like he cared. One of my deepest regrets as a child is killing that fish. The fish didn't deserve it. He was just swimming along, stuck in the same shitty situation as I was. Hurting myself never seemed to rouse Dad's attention, but hurting something he seemed to care for did. I've always been an animal lover. Causing outright harm to an utterly defenseless creature is still fucking difficult for me to wrap my lobes around, and I cannot absolve myself of that guilt whatsoever. I was an aching child looking for some semblance of control, I think. It did get his attention, just not for the better. He was great with kids, apparently, as long as they weren't his. Which, in hindsight, is fucking repugnant. Especially seeing as he killed himself in a fucking park, and I didn't know this until a while after I wrote this. A family secret that his mother is desperate to keep under wraps is outright that he was a pedophile. His capacity to get along with children is deeply fucking disturbing in hindsight, as well as where he chose to kill himself. I think that was one last fuck you to everyone. But it's not like his mother's going to jump out of fucking denial. It hurts too much. Never mind the outright harm, damage, and agony this causes others. Sparing herself pain somehow matters more than sparing children. We don't speak, her and I. I don't have any affiliation with that side of the family whatsoever, nor do I want any in any way. His son's just as awful as he is, and I'm happy to leave that thought there. Back to reading. He liked to scare the shit out of little me, seemingly for his own entertainment, especially when I didn't do exactly as he wanted me to. One way I knew to piss him off was to give him the silent treatment, which usually got me a one-way ticket home, at least until he felt bad about not being a parent in any meaningful way 6 months or so down the road. Until home was his apartment, the silent treatment worked beautifully. Then he'd just leave me home alone. Dad wasn't home much, even when I lived with him. Sometimes I'd hear him playing his guitar through the walls, across the way, at his girlfriend's apartment. He was a talented musician once upon a time. In no small part does my own musical ability come from him. I remember going surprise off-roading with him after some small thing I did on the way home from school pissed him off. Riding with him in some shitty old truck he threw huge tires on for no practical fucking reason whatsoever. He could barely get in the wretched thing from his wheelchair, but his handbrake slash gas adapter worked, so he was satisfied. He'd floor it, taking steeper and steeper inclines while screaming at me. Once I ended up puking all over his dashboard, and he took it as a personal offense rather than a direct result of his lack of give-a-fuck. I'd think that sobbing and squeezing my stuffed Pikachu as tight to my little chest as my tiny arms could would be an indication of me having a bad time. But apparently it wasn't. Or he just didn't care. If I closed my eyes, he'd demand that I open them, and I would. What the fuck else could I do? I still have a faint scar where the shoulder strap gave me a wicked friction burn every time he'd shove me in the truck for this exercise-enforced fun. Surprises still make me nauseous nearly 15 years later, though it's much more than 15 at this point, and being in any car makes me anxious to this day. Our relationship was strained at best, and there are long periods of time where I refuse to acknowledge him at all. Until I had to start taking care of him, at least. Even then, I'd use as few words as possible. I did the same job for him that I do now for my aunt and my grandmother. Essentially, I am a caretaker for very physically disabled people. And I fucking hated taking care of him. Deeply resent to this day that I was ever in that position to begin with. However, he never paid a penny of fucking child support, so why should anybody else make a penny off of him? If someone should, it should be his daughter. Mom and I were at my aunt's house babysitting when we got the call about Dad. I remember feeling a dull pang of anger, which faded as fast as it came, and then I scooped the baby up in my arms, deciding to keep her busy while Mom talked to Dad's mom. I was just happy to have something to do, you know, to keep my hands busy for a while with someone who didn't feel uncomfortable laughing and being happy. I'm good with kids, and taking care of kids makes me happy, so it seemed like the thing to do. Mom didn't have to tell me what happened. It was a matter of time, one I'd often thought of before on my way to work or any time someone would mention going to see him at all. I thought one of us would find his body in his apartment. Of Mom, Yaya, and I firmly believe I'd have been the least damaged by finding him post-suicide. Maybe that's why he pushed himself to that park so late at night. I have trouble believing he'd bother being considerate of any of us, but it isn't entirely impossible, I guess. When you tell someone that your dad has killed himself, their immediate response is, "I'm sorry." It's what people expect you to need to hear in order to heal. It's polite, socially acceptable, and compassionate, a script you already know off-book suited for any tragic situation. But it leaves no room for what I'm really feeling and thinking. Sorting through how this feels is challenging. Probably because my relationship with my dad was turbulent at best and mutually assured destruction at worst. I've spent the bulk of my life grieving the father I never had, afraid of the belligerent man-child I was told to love. In a way, his death is much easier to digest than I could have anticipated, simply because any affection I felt for him dissipated so long ago that I do not recall feeling genuine affection for him at all. Excitement at the idea of plans he'd never actually follow through on, or promises he'd never keep, sure. There was nothing below the surface, though. Nothing to back up the "I love you, babies," or "Daddy misses you." They're empty words. My well of hope for the father he could have been dried out long ago. Sorry is so far from what I feel for Dad. I'm relieved on one hand to be one step further removed from him. Knowing that I will never see him again is very comforting. I realize this may sound callous. Please, try to sympathize. Dad did his damnedest to force everyone who loved him out of his life in favor of whoever would enable his behavior. I began to distance myself from him as a little girl because that was safer than the alternative. Toward the end of his life, three people made their best effort to keep him alive despite himself. Yaya, Mom, and I. Mom didn't want Yaya to do it all herself, and I felt obligated to help the two of them. So caring for him became my job. I wasn't very good at it, but he wasn't good at taking care of me either, so I think we're on an even keel there. This should hurt so much more than it does, but I made peace with my truth somewhere along the way. The ache is subsiding, but I'd be okay if it doesn't completely stop. I don't know if there will be anything left for me to feel for him if it stops. I don't know which is worse, but it doesn't really matter either way. He'd been gone for years already. This is just slightly more permanent. I don't know much about how grieving your father is supposed to feel, but I do know that this isn't it. I know it's supposed to hurt. I don't know if I've killed the proverbial nerve connecting me to him, or if it's just numb from lack of use. I feel more connected to the fantasy of the father I never had in my head than I do the person I knew him as. Chester Bennington's suicide hurts in ways Dad's just doesn't. And that seems like such a fucking sad thing to say, even to me, but I can't change my truth to suit this narrative. You can't heal if you don't honor your feelings, and healing is all I want at the end of the day. Fuck fighting it, fuck self-destruction, fuck statistics. One suicide causes a ripple effect. This is absolutely true. That dad killed himself leaves everyone who knew him twice as likely to attempt suicide from this point forward. I refuse to be part of that body count. Maybe just to spite him or to prove to myself that I am stronger than he ever was or will be. He doesn't get to be a factor in my death. That boundary is self-contained, though susceptible to change as my depression fluctuates. But determination hasn't failed me yet. If I can stick to my conviction, I'm golden. I feel like that conviction is my philosopher's stone, or it could be. Immortality isn't necessary. I wouldn't want eternal life if it was offered to me, but legitimately wanting to live is a very different story. I've spent too much time chasing an early grave. By the time I made it to 18, I'd attempted suicide nearly into double digits. Choosing my life was unthinkable. Now that the idea is bouncing around my lobes, all I have to do is hold on to it. Through whatever may come, as long as I don't lose my grasp on this conviction, on this philosopher's fucking stone, if you'd prefer, I'll be all right. I didn't go to the funeral. I couldn't find a reason to, and my therapist didn't see a reason for me to force myself to go either. Sure, he had something to do with my genes, but that isn't justification in the slightest. I never knew whatever good may have been in him. Those who knew him when he was young may have, but their recollections hold only fragments of value to me. I have no interest in whoever he was to them. I am, however, interested in tiny diagnostic clues and whatever bits of information match characteristics or talents that I have. I forgot I added this. For example, I've got a keen ear for music and can instinctively keep on beat if I'm at ease. This irritates the shit out of my mom. She sang in choir in high school and had trouble keeping time. Usually I don't even realize I'm tapping along to whatever is on, and I mess up very, very easily once I do notice. I don't have to like the song either, which is perplexing. According to Yaya, she felt Dad kick in time with the radio while she was pregnant with him, so my bet is on his part of my lineage. My point is, unless I can use some piece of information about who my dad was once upon a time to parallel my own choices, characteristics, talents, or troubles, I'm not interested. It'll go in one ear and out the other. Unless it is interesting, I will not retain the information. Mapping his pathology and comparing it to my own, I feel, is necessary to see where we intersect, because he had no capacity to tell me any of this himself. He was too lost in his own head. I don't begrudge him for being sick, and I don't begrudge him for passing aspects of his sickness to me. He had no choice in receiving them either. His actions, even, I can accept at this point, including the physical and sexual abuse. Again, he was ding-dong ditching at death's door for decades. There is no cure for what ails either of us. Not for the psychiatric symptoms, nor chronic pain, not for the diabetes he had, nor for his addictions. Due to complications from his untreated and unmonitored diabetes, he had to have both legs amputated. Gangrenous sores, many self-inflicted, are resolved by the subsequent amputation of limbs, as they were for him. But phantom pain persists, and for Dad, this was on top of previous injuries and decades of chronic pain already. Factor in the absurd impulsivity of untreated attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Add psychosis. Add stimulants and painkillers. the weight of less is enough to be fatal. Something that seems counterintuitive to quote-unquote normal people is inflicting pain upon yourself in order to force your body to release endorphins so that pain you're experiencing lessens. Take comfort in the fact that you do not understand if this is you. Bottoming out your pain threshold isn't an experiment I'd suggest to anyone. It's addictive. You're fucking with your neurochemistry and inciting a punishment-reward response that serves to keep us alive long enough to return to safety. This is the basic survival mechanism behind forcing yourself to endure pain. Until safety becomes a ritual requiring a sacrifice of your own flesh and blood, at least. Short-term gratification is habit-forming, especially when someone is struggling. People who've never been more than idly suicidal cannot fathom how deep these impulses run. You have a parasitic twin inside you, right beside whoever everyone else can see. Other people don't know when they're talking to you or your little parasite. Hell, you're not even sure where the fucking parasite ends and you begin. But people will tell you to ignore the twin because they think it speaks through your mouth. The trouble is, you can't. You have to respond. That twin has no other function than to incite chaos within you. How different, really, is attempting suicide outright to neglecting your health, to relapsing? Addiction kills in insidious ways. Take Carrie Fisher, for example, or River Phoenix or Prince. What about tobacco? People who just can't quit smoking, even though they require a fucking cannula and oxygen 24/7. What about the diabetic who refuses insulin and won't stop devouring sugar and starch with little moderation? I know people who do these things personally. I have cared for people who do these things personally. The diabetic is blind in one eye and can barely walk. He's also dead at this point. The smoker can't even walk to the bathroom without being winded. Essentially, they're committing suicide at a turtle's pace. All I can do is watch, like an avalanche or a flood. And the smoker I take care of still, to this day, I don't begrudge her for anything she's done at this point. I am simply doing my best to give her the best end that I can. But tell me exactly how they're not killing themselves. Their method is indirect, I'll admit, but the end result is exactly the same. When you neglect yourself in favor of your vices, one relapse can be all it takes. Robin Williams is the only person I can think of who people respond favorably to the notion of suicide being a viable solution. He's shown sympathy more often than scorn. That his brain's malfunction was absolute and degenerative seem to be key factors, not to mention how utterly beloved he was as a comedian and a fucking actor. How can you not love Robin Williams? Come on. And as a straight white male comedian, which very rarely will not win you favor. Still, that he committed suicide is an incontrovertible fact. Nothing can change this. I understand scorning a murder-suicide. But I do not see a difference between Chester's suicide, my dad's, and Robin's. All were tragic. All three suffered for decades. Sometimes silently, sometimes screaming to be fucking heard. They all left their children and families behind. It's so fucking easy to believe that everyone you love is better off without you when you're being eaten alive by your own brain. I wholeheartedly believe that people don't know how to respond to suicide. There is no justification, truly, as suicide is no fucking crime. You can't punish someone for successfully completing a suicide, though an attempt is enough for condemnation, apparently. Those left behind suffer, sure, but suffering isn't a fucking crime either. Whether they move forward in an afterlife or not is beyond our comprehension, so how the fuck does it matter? All we have is faith, which I can't condemn anyone for. Faith isn't a fucking crime either, but anybody who looks like they might be Muslim is suspicious and somehow deserves to be segregated, quote-unquote, for fucking security. Faith isn't a crime, but then again, neither is suicide. Yet faith and suicide somehow deserve condemnation, not mercy. People are going to whinge about making this political. This is a political subject, unfucking fortunately. Healthcare is political too, because capitalism somehow is more important than people. Only the dead seem to be beyond the current political dumpster fires of the world, which have only escalated since this was written. Medication and therapy help if you are willing to do the grunt work. It'll be a battle nevertheless, and the war will invariably end in your death. I want to alter that sentence to make it seem less bleak, but I can't find a way to without feeling like I'm trying to sugarcoat what I see as the Russo-fucking-loop truth. At any rate, I can honestly say that I don't feel so low today. I'm sad for Chester and for Chris Cornell and everybody who loved them. Not to mention Benjamin Koch, son of Lisa Marie Presley, who very, very recently also completed suicide. I'm sad for them and for those who love them, but I understand why they chose what they chose. And I'm not going to condemn them for making that choice in any way. December 2020 will mark 10 years since my last attempt, so long as I can keep my head above water between now and then. Make no mistake, I've self-harmed since. I've been suicidal many, many, many times between then and now. I've been on and off dozens of medications, started and completed therapeutic programs, lost friends and family and heroes to their demons. But I'm still here. And for the first time, I can see a future that doesn't revolve around self-destruction. That didn't seem possible before. It won't seem possible forever. But hope will have to sustain me through whatever turbulence will come. That's enough. It has to be. So that was that. That was nowhere near as triggering as I expected it to be. I don't exactly remember, but I think when I did that edit in 2018, I removed the more visceral and graphic moments. The first time I wrote this and posted it, I didn't mention the sexual abuse at all, in no small part because I didn't want to fucking think about it. Why would anybody want to remember something like that? But this is a fact that I can't do anything about. And while in no small part I am here to confront those triggers and de-escalate them, I can't pretend that they don't still fucking hurt, and they probably always will. But that's okay. Something like that is supposed to hurt. Allowing it to dictate your life and every move you make from then on, that is wrong. And that is a choice. It doesn't feel like a choice in the moment. It feels like you are enslaved to your trauma. I'm breaking these fucking chains. I don't give a fuck what the cost is. Whatever it takes, I will. It's just pain. That's all. Pain is a fucking lesson. An invaluable teacher if you are willing to learn from it. And while antidepressants can mitigate quite a bit of that pain, I am kind of grateful at this point that I've been so forgetful with taking my meds this past week or so. Because I don't know if I would have quite gotten the umption and gumption up to do this at all, and now it's not as bad as I thought it would be. I mean, it's My brain likes to catastrophize things. That's partly just ADD, really. Not to mention my fucking anxiety. But in acknowledging that these things are real and that they have a tangible, massive, deep impact, you can take some of their power from them. You can turn your pain into strength. That's what I'm fucking doing. That is what I will work my ass off to do for the rest of whatever the fuck is left of my life. And I'm not going to make any apologies for this whatsoever. I feel like, since I mentioned faith in this, I should probably, close. Talk about my own for a moment. Where did it go? As you may be aware, I am a Satanist. It's not what you think it is, I promise. Where have the tenets gone? Da, 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 da. I'm looking in my sad days folder. da, 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 da. Where are you? Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Where'd you go? There we go. The core values of the branch of Satanism I follow have always been overwhelmingly important to me. And that organized religion does not adhere to guidelines like these. That people use religion to fucking hurt each other. That sours me on religion in and of itself. So while I would not say that I am an atheist, although I used to, and that was something I clung to outright because religion in and of itself just left an awful taste in my mouth, and it still fucking does. Valuing principles over people is fundamentally wrong. I don't give a fuck what you believe. As long as you follow something similar to this. And to me, this is basic, absolute fucking base level. Being a decent person, treating people as you would like to fucking be treated. That religion is often void of these, if not forsaking fundamental humanity entirely, simply to appeal to principles written by people, even if they are parroting, in a way, the word of God. It is still filtered through their perception and the perception of their culture at the time. If you examine translation in and of itself, even, it is easy to see how much is lost when translating at all. People are fallible, utterly, utterly fallible, each and every one of us. And who wrote our religious texts? People. Even if these texts were legitimately inspired by a higher power or projected into your mind by a higher power, it is still filtered through your perception. Believing for a split second that you are omnipotent is your own fucking folly. You need to examine this for yourself, because I guarantee you, you are not. I am not. No fucking buddy is. This is why I am very, very fucking proud to call myself a Satanist. We follow these tenets, Seven. 1. One should strive to act with compassion and empathy toward all creatures in accordance with reason. 2. The struggle for justice is an ongoing and necessary pursuit that should prevail over laws and institutions. 3. One's body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone. 4. The freedoms of others should be respected, including the freedom to offend. To willfully and unjustly encroach upon the freedoms of another is to forego one's own. 5. Beliefs should conform to one's best scientific understanding of the world. One should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit one's beliefs. 6. People are fallible. If one makes a mistake, one should do one's best to rectify it and resolve any harm that might have been caused. 7. Every tenet is a guiding principle designed to inspire nobility in action and thought. The spirit of compassion, wisdom, and justice should always prevail over the written or spoken word. So, while the perception of satanic panic is indelible, unfortunately, and there are isolated instances when this is a fact. Not many, but they do exist. That's not the kind of Satanism I follow in the slightest. That is the precise form of Satanism I will condemn at every opportunity. Now let's get to the 10 non-commandments of Satanism. Well, according to the Satanic Temple, which is what I follow. The 10 non-commandments. 1. Be open-minded and willing to alter your beliefs with new evidence. 2. Strive to understand what is most likely to be true, not to believe what you wish to be true. 3. The scientific method is the most reliable way of understanding the natural world. 4. Every person has the right to control of their body. 5. God is not necessary to be a good person or to live a full and meaningful life. 6. Be mindful of the consequences of all your actions and recognize that you must take responsibility for them. 7. Treat others as you would want them to treat you and can reasonably expect them to want to be treated. 8. We have the responsibility to consider others, including future generations. 9. There is no one right way to live. 10. Leave the world a better place than you found it. To me, all of this goes without saying. However, it does need to be said. Just because this is something innate to me doesn't mean that it is to others. And there's nothing wrong with that. Not at all. Oh, I remember that now. And, side note. Something I particularly fucking love about the Satanic Temple is a recent action they've taken. As of August 5th, 2020, satanic abortions are protected by religious liberty laws. In accordance with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which applies to America predominantly, but I have no doubt whatsoever that the temple is working on bringing this to every fucking country around the goddamn world. And yes, I am saying goddamn in the most literal fucking interpretation. First trimester abortions are now exempt from unnecessary regulations for all individuals practicing the Satanic Temple's religious abortion ritual. This is because being forced to carry a fetus that, for any reason, you do not want, outright defies our tenets. In particular, one's body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone, as well as beliefs should conform to one's best scientific understanding of the world. One should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit one's beliefs. Thus, hail Satan. And that is also why I am not remotely interested in watering down my fucking truth. I realize that not everybody is going to be ready to hear this, or in any way ready to even try to understand. That's fine. You don't have to. That's not going to stop me from saying whatever the fuck I have to say, so long as it does not cause abject harm to anyone else. But I also have to not fucking outright cause harm to myself. And that is something I have struggled with for the overwhelming majority of my life. That my body is fundamentally inviolable and subject to my own will does not entail that it is okay for me to hurt myself. It doesn't. In no small part because that is me reacting to the fuckery in my brain. This is not me being level-headed and reasonable. Although it seems reasonable, and in a way it is. If I am harming myself to keep myself from getting to a point where I feel I have no option but to kill myself, a bit of bloodletting isn't terribly harmful in comparison. Which is why I am not going to hold myself to any standard of never self-harming again, because it does serve a fucking purpose to keep the person self-harming alive. In this context, subject to one's own will alone is most prudent, I feel. This doesn't mean that in any way I am keen on habitual self-harm ever, ever, ever again. This means that I am going to forgive myself for relapsing when this invariably happens. Relapse is a fact of recovery. And though it has been a very, very long time, shit, 2018, May of 2018, if I remember correctly, I don't hold that against myself. Because at the moment, at that particular moment in time, I was doing what I felt necessary to de-escalate the swelling, raging storm in me. To keep it from getting to a critical point where I felt no reason to so much as try. I've been in that place too many times. Seeing no reason to fucking try. I'm not willing to subject myself to that again. The brain is an indelible part of the body. I have to recognize when my brain is working against me and violating my own will, thus enslaving me to it and my illness. Illnesses, really. Rather than my own level-headed reason. And I am a very fucking reasonable person. This doesn't mean that I am at all exempt from moments of losing all semblance of rationality. Nobody is. This means that I am going to do my absolute damnedest to pick my goddamn self back up and dust myself off and try the fuck again. I'm not going to let Dad's illnesses and the trauma he left me with factor into my death. Whatsoever. Absolutely fucking not. And it's taken me a very, very long time to really comprehend what all that entails. Finding the Satanic Temple in and of itself has been a huge help to me. In no small part because its fundamental tenets are aspects of me to begin with. Finding something that resonates with me so fucking wholly, so fully. That's not something I've ever found in any religion. No system of belief whatsoever has left me with this perception or this feeling. I am a very proud Satanist. I'm a fucking card-carrying Satanist. Looking beside my desk, I have my certificate of membership hanging over my computer. Kind of. It's not exactly, well, I mean, it's like adjacent to my computer. Technically, It's like diagonal for my computer, but still. And now I'm not going to show it because it has my actual name on it. Maybe I'll bleep that part out. But, eh. I don't expect anybody to be particularly fucking interested, so I probably won't, actually. I'm going to wrap this up. If you've listened to this, thank you. I do truly appreciate your time and attention, and more than anything else, your compassion. We don't have to let our differences separate us. We really don't. We choose to. While I am a Satanist, I am deeply moral. And I want everybody, everyone, on this planet and orbiting this planet, to recognize that they have that same capacity within themselves. Am I going to enforce this? No. Am I going to push this on anyone? Absolutely fucking not. I am more than willing to leave a trail for people to follow, however. Or leave these puzzle pieces somewhere they can find them to put this puzzle together for themselves. Technically, yes, this is manipulation. In no way do I mean this to be harmful. At all. I simply understand that learning lessons like this is extremely fucking difficult and taxing. More so, these lessons are much, much, much more impactful if you put these pieces together for yourself. I know that firsthand. So, I am happy to scatter pieces wherever others may find them, and should they seek to put them together, cool. That's something I can respect very, 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 very deeply. And then again, I am a voracious information seeker myself, so it's not like I can really see someone else seeking information as a bad thing. I don't think it is in any way. I fucking fundamentally believe that seeking information is a good thing. And I don't want to tell anybody what to think or what to believe whatsoever. Absolutely not. I very simply want to foster an environment of understanding and respect based on differences. Those differences don't have to separate us. We allow them to. Separation is not innate to those differences, however. And now I should go and make myself something for breakfast. I don't want to. Ooh, chips and salsa. I'm fucking clearly great at adulting. Oh well, at least I have somewhat of an appetite at the moment. Have a good Thursday. Wherever you are. Or whatever day this is that you're listening to this. It's Thursday, August 13th for me, so forgive me if I say Thursday and it's not Thursday for you. Please. Take care of yourselves. Please. As best you can. I perfection is a goddamn lie. Health, however, is attainable. Healing, as well, is attainable. I hope, genuinely from the bottom of my lead-bearing heart, that if anything in this triggered you, I hope you are able to respond rather than react. Not for my sake, for your own. But if you can't, that's okay too. Maybe you just need to react. Maybe letting that reaction run its course is what you need to do. And that's okay. Just do what you need to do for you. Take care of yourselves, please. not for me, not because I am asking you for yourselves. I absolutely guarantee you that you are worth it, no matter what your problems are. I mean, even if you're a fucking psychopath, this doesn't make you in any way exempt from deserving basic humanity. Does this mean I will in any way coddle you or co-sign your bullshit? No, absolutely not. But either way, you are still just a person like everybody else is. And everybody deserves the basic respect of having their emotions, reactions, responses recognized. So again, take care of yourselves and each other as best you can. If you're listening still, thank you for sailing into the dark with me.